You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk Live co-host and a former NFL quarterback. Give me the strategy last night you did not like.
Well, the strategy I did not like. Well, I think the 49ers pick at number three is probably the strategy I did not like. Okay, that'd be the first one.
Okay,
that just jumps
but let
to
me
my
start.
Mind.
Let me start there because you're friends with Kyle Shanahan, right?
Right, right.
You've known him for 20 years.
20 years.
Okay.
Right.
And I thought you kept saying Mac Jones. And
sure.
Okay, there has to be some kind of contact between you two. And then I realized that maybe you don't have a strong friendship with Kyle Shanahan anymore. I think that's really what it is. But they spent a lot to go up and get Trey Lance. And was Mac Jones a smokescreen all along?
I mean, listen, I don't know that. I don't know. And again, I talk to my buddy Kyle Shanahan. We talk about a lot of football. As I've always explained to people, we don't get into the specifics of their football team. They don't. I don't. So I don't know. Now, I could just say this. Like, I had conversations after the college year was over and everything like that. I know he viewed Mac Jones as a very big-time prospect, for sure. But no, I was going off of what I thought I knew of my friend and the kind of quarterback he likes. He's always waxed poetically about Drew Brees and Matt Ryan and those type of quarterbacks to where I thought, all right, Mac Jones is Drew Brees to me coming out. And I thought that's where he would go. So maybe we're not as good of friends as I thought, or maybe I don't know him as well as I did. But no, don't know if I ever would have traded up. I've said that from the start. I would have never traded up to three in this draft anyways, once I knew I wasn't going to get Trevor Lawrence or Zach Wilson. And I think that the number three pick in Trey Lance is very, very risky.
All right, if I said you could have Mac Jones, Justin Fields, or Trey Lance.
I'm taking Mac Jones. I'm definitely.
Did the Patriots get a steal?
Yes, I think so. I mean, you saw how Bill acted. I mean, they were on the clock for what, 7 seconds, and they turned the clock, they turned it in? So they obviously, you know, thought that he is a guy that really knows how to play the position and play it the way they want to. And really, again, in my heart of hearts, that's where, you know, I got to see it to believe it or hear something. I really still think the 49ers traded up for Mac Jones originally. And somewhere in that process, it got changed. You know, I think a lot of people in the NFL thought the Carolina Panthers and the New England Patriots were hot on Mac Jones. And I think that's why Shanahan moved up. I don't know that, but that's what I do believe in my heart of hearts. And as you could tell, I've been wrong on that before anyways.
The strategy you liked last night.
How could you not love the New York Giants and what they did, right? I think that's one, you know, Dave Gettleman, he gets a lot of crap. I'm a Giants fan. But once you see, okay, Devontae Smith, who it sounds like they really had their eye on, he's gone, to trade down and get a first-round pick for next year and then also get a guy who's a Tyreek Hill type of weapon in Kadarius Toney. So they kind of get a guy that they needed or wanted anyways, and yet they get a first-round pick out of it. It's hard for me not to like that move by the New York Giants.
Jimmy Garoppolo's future in San Francisco is what?
Over. They can say what they want, but like, so here's the other thing. I don't know. This is where it's dicey with that pick, right? And I don't love the strategy. Trey Lance, you've heard me say, I don't love his throwing motion. I don't think he's the most natural thrower in the draft by any stretch of the imagination. I think his running is good, but I think it's overrated. Again, it's against one double A people. It's not Lamar Jackson we're talking about. All right. So that's where I question it. He's never run a 2-minute drill in his college career. He's never really had a game where he had the pressure was on you to perform at a high level for them to win the game. And he didn't play football last year. You can't sit him out again another year behind Jimmy Garoppolo. At some point, the guy's got to play and throw footballs if you want to get him better at it. So I think ultimately they could say what they want, but Jimmy G, I would think, is on the trade block as soon as they feel like, okay, Trey Lance, he's comfortable here. He knows our offense, and that's maybe when you hear that talk.
But do you think the Niners start the season with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I don't. I don't think. I think to me, you're getting into risky territory once again. They got a good football team. You know, oh, so when are they going to make the change? After they're 9-2? Or maybe in the playoffs? And, like, what if they go to the NFC Championship game and they're, like, a 13-3 team? And now you got Jimmy Garoppolo as your starter all year. You traded all those picks to what? What are you going to do with Trey Lance now? So that's where I think you got to play him. He needs it. And the beauty of the pick, at least to say this, because I know I've said more negative than positive here, Shanahan is a genius in the run scheme. And now to have a quarterback like this go along with it, that's where I think there is beauty to the pick and could be really, really intriguing going forward.
Yeah, it gives him sort of that Lamar Jackson option. He's not right. Lamar Jackson, but it does open things up a little bit more. The Bengals at 5, I thought the smart move was getting a tackle to protect your quarterback instead of a wide receiver for your quarterback, because your quarterback is not useful if he's on his back.
It's a tough one. Yeah.
I think Chase is wonderful.
Right.
But I still have to protect my quarterback. And the Kansas City Chiefs realize, as great as Mahomes is, if we don't protect him, then, you know, he becomes mortal.
Yeah. Right. No, it was a tough decision for my money. I mean, Sewell is a special tackle. You're right. They haven't been good up front. They haven't opened up holes for Joe Mixon. They play in the AFC North that's got studs galore coming off the edge. So it makes sense. But I also understand the pick. Like you said, Chase is special. I mean, he was the best college wide receiver 2 years ago. Mm. You know, it's hard for me to think, with the kind of athlete and specimen he is, that he wouldn't have still had that title if he had played this past year. So I think from that standpoint, there's a special connection with your quarterback. And, you know, they're going the version of, like, hey, we're going to get Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins and receivers first, and then they're going to try to fill in the offensive line, to your point. And there should be some really good ones there for them to take advantage of at the top of the second, even in the top of the third. The offensive line is a pretty deep position in this draft.
Did the Bears get a steal?
I don't know if they got a steal. I mean, it's got the potential to be a steal. You know, Fields is dicey for me. I know I'm in the minority with that. I think I've told you a little bit. I have a little issue with how he does throw the ball. I think there's a little hitch in his giddy up. There's some mechanical things that really concern me that I'm not sold you can definitely fix. But his arm is powerful, and his running is special. There's no doubt he was the best running quarterback in this draft. He's Cam Newton, except I would say he's quicker than Cam Newton coming out of college and that stuff. So that's where, of course, they can maybe buy them some time, and you can use that aspect as he continues to get polished and better with some of the throwing aspects of his game.
Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk Live co-host. What do you do if you're the Green Bay Packers with Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, the writing's on the wall, don't you think? I mean,
But who wrote it?
They did. When they chucked Jordan Love, they wrote it on the wall. Now they're trying to, like, you know, cross it out with, like, some pencils and, like, be like, no, we didn't do it. It's not really real. And, like, they're trying to cover up for it. But for me, that's where it starts, you know, and I think Rodgers will be back this year, but I think this is what I've been saying for the last 2 weeks. I think this is it, though. I don't think you'll ever see him in Green Bay after this season. There's issues there, and I do think the Broncos would be the team.
Why not just trade him now?
I don't know. You're right. I don't know. You know, one, because the guy they drafted in the first round is not ready yet, so that's the first problem. And then two, he's still definitely one of the three best players in football, and Aaron Rodgers. And their team is good. So they're going to try to exhaust all options to try to save that, because they are in a Super Bowl window. But they've, you know, they've blown it a lot by not really supporting the guy to take advantage of that window opportunity.
I have no information on this, but I got the feeling, here's my theory, that Rodgers said to the Packers yesterday, hey, you jacked up my draft last year by taking Jordan Love. Didn't even give me a heads up. Now I'm going to jack up your draft day here, and now the game is on.
I mean, I don't like put that past him a little bit. You know, I think the jumping off point, of course, was the 49ers calling Green Bay and taking one more shot and seeing if that can happen. You know, there's no doubt. So I do think for the first time in his career, public perception is on his side a little bit here. Just because I think everybody recognizes how good he is. He's never really had those game-changing difference makers around him. The pressure's always been on him. And the Packers made this bed. So it's really just to be like, how serious is he going to go all in on this and really try to force Green Bay's hand? Is he willing to kind of put himself out there is going to be the big question for me.
Okay, where could you see him land?
Like the Broncos are the team, like I said, that I think make a lot of sense. You know, I had heard that they were kind of hot on him for maybe the idea of being the quarterback in 2022 before this whole conversation started anyways. And, you know, a lot like when Peyton Manning went to Denver, there's a lot of things here that are similar. Like, whoa, there's sneaky talent at that wide receiver position. They got studs there. They got a stud tight end. They've got their offensive line in order finally. And their defense with Vic Fangio and Von Miller and Chubb and, you know, now Patrick Surtain and Kyle Fuller and Ronald Darby. I mean, they're one of those teams that I do think could jump onto the scene this year if they get the right quarterback play where we go, whoa, they're more of a contender than I expected.
Give me the quarterback who will be taken tonight that will eventually be a starter.
I think that's Kellen Mond. I always have thought Kellen Mond had the ability to be a first-round quarterback. He's got everything you want. He's been playing pro football at Texas A&M the last few years, and what I mean that is playing in the pocket with pressure around him and having to throw into extremely tight windows and make high-level throws. He passes it with great grades all the time. Explosive arm, really good athlete, unbelievable technique. If he would just be a little bit more loose and play backyard football, Dan, he would have been a first-round pick. I mean, I don't doubt that, but
wait,
I think he's the first quarterback.
Explain that. What do you mean?
Like, he's a little robotic in the pocket.
Okay.
You know, Jimbo Fisher is very much like, no, you stand in the pocket and go 1, 2, 3, and there's plays where you watch and you go, wait, 1 and 2 aren't open and the pocket's kind of collapsing. You're too fast and athletic. Get out. Buy some time. You know, be a Zach Wilson or a Trevor Lawrence and get out and now try to find a throw down the field that way. That's like an area he needs to get better at, but that's one that doesn't concern me a whole lot. That's an easier fix to me than fixing Justin Fields' mechanical issues and things like that.
Give us some other names to keep an eye on tonight.
Well, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah.
I loved watching him. I saw a few games with him, and I thought he was an impactful player. I just don't know at that position. That's why he didn't get drafted in the first round.
I think so. Dan, I think your logic is right. I think he's kind of one of those hybrid guys where everybody's like, man, we like him, but is he going to be a safety or a linebacker? What exactly is he going to do? And I think that scares people. I think people are scared of that kind of formula. I think they've gotten back to like we don't love the Isaiah Simmons things all that much. We'd rather just get a guy that we know is really good at this one spot. But I think you look at him, De'Ami Brown from North Carolina to watch out for. I said Mond, Elijah Moore, the wide receiver from Ole Miss. Terrace Marshall Jr., the wide receiver for LSU. I think you see him go off here pretty good. Azeez Ojulari, the edge guy from Georgia. I think those are the few of the names that jump out to me that you see go off in the top 15, 20 picks of this round, Dan.
Well, thank you, bud. We'll be following you on Twitter. Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk Live co-host. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too, buddy. See you, man.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Mike Tirico is going to host the Kentucky Derby live from Churchill Downs. That'll be tomorrow. That'll be the fifth time he's done that. Their coverage starts at 2:30 Eastern. Also, part of Saturday's Derby show will be Mike's championship discussion with Bill Belichick and also Bob Baffert, the six-time Kentucky Derby winning trainer. Well, let me start with that there, Mike. How did that come up, and what was the topic of conversation with Bill?
I'd love to tell you, but the segment's out of time with you waiting to hit the post.
Thanks to talk to you, Mike. Have fun at Churchill Downs.
Yeah. Thanks. I love 2112. Great album. Thanks for being on. Have a great weekend. So Belichick, we see Belichick at the Preakness every year. Baltimore guy, loves going to Pimlico. He and Seth Klarman, one of the big horse racing owners have a good relationship. So Bill's there every year, and I know that he really enjoys horse racing, and he's won 6 Super Bowls, obviously. Baffert's won the Super Bowl of Thoroughbred Racing, Kentucky Derby, 6 times. So we've told the Baffert story 100 different ways. So if you're, let's give this a whirl. So I was out at Santa Anita in Southern California, interviewed Baffert, and then we did a Zoom, and we zoomed in Belichick. It was hysterical. Bill was great. In the piece, which will air on the pre-race show, Belichick laughs, tells jokes. He shares his love of horse racing. And Bill Belichick says we're on to Cincinnati without being prompted, which was sensational. I wanted to walk off. I'm like, this is the best day ever. We got Belichick to say we're on to Cincinnati on his own. It was great. So it was just a fun time, and it's Belichick in a different light. And same true with Baffert.
I am never going to see that side of Bill Belichick that everybody keeps telling me, oh, you would love him. Man, he is so funny. I'd never been around him when he's let his guard down. So, you know, maybe one of these days I'll see that side. Well, maybe I'll just tune in tomorrow.
you could do that.
Yeah, and then I'll see that side.
The highlight of the piece is Baffert comes up with a term about dealing with, you know, media attention, all that stuff. And Belichick, like, lights up when Baffert says it, and he goes, Bob, I like that. I might steal that for next year. So I'm going to be watching the Belichick press conferences to see if he steals the Baffert line. The piece was fun, and it was great of Bill. I'm very appreciative that he answered our call and was willing to play along with us.
Now, you did Notre Dame games this year. Mm-hmm. Best player you saw either on Notre Dame or against Notre Dame this year was who?
Well, it's hard to say Trevor Lawrence because he didn't play in the game. DJ Uiagalelei, the guy who's going to replace Lawrence, was the quarterback for that game. I would probably say Travis Etienne, and Notre Dame handled him for a while. I thought one of the Notre Dame players would go in the first round, and that was Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, the linebacker.
I like him a lot.
I love him as a player, versatility, you know, that a kind of Isaiah Simmons hybrid role. You can do a lot of things with him. He will not last long in the second round. And if your team gets him, this guy, he brings it, speed, power with that speed, and a really smart kid and very, he loves football. I hate to run through all the Kuiper cliches there, but he fits the bill full time, and whoever gets him will be good. And Liam Eichenberg, the left tackle, too. There are a couple of good Notre Dame players I think will go in the second round. But opponents, I say ETN was the best of the bunch.
What is it like hosting when you host a draft? When you know, there's so many moving parts there.
Yeah.
Like just trying to keep focus there. You know, Greeny did a great job last night. You know, his first draft. Rich Eisen's been doing this for a long, long time. But mm-hmm. What is that like with information where it feels like you got people talking in both of your ears? If you had a third ear, they'd be talking into that as well. The crowd noise in there as well.
Right. Unfortunately, you're talking out of something else while people are talking to your ears during the draft, right?
Yeah.
You know what, Dan? It's funny you said that because, you know, ESPN on their social media put out the class photo, the legendary class photo of the SportsCenter anchors because Rich and Mike were in there. And they showed, you know, the two guys who were hosting the draft and Boomer's sitting in the middle and you're in there and Robin and Charlie and Chris McKendry, a whole bunch of us. And I saw that. I just reached out to both Rich and Mike and said, hey, good luck with the draft. I did day 2 10 times or 11 times. I did the main set once. Berman couldn't do the draft and did, I think, like 7 or 8 NBA drafts. And I texted Greeny. I said, and I'll be honest with you guys, I said, tonight is, if you want to think of anything from the experience of the chair, it's a night to be Chris Paul, not James Harden. You got to just take it and dish it and take it and dish it and take it and dish it. It's not a night to dribble the ball into the floor and step back and jack up shots, even though James Harden's great at doing that. Mm-hmm. And Greeny was true. That's a hard job to do. The thing that always leaves me empty as a viewer is as soon as the pick happens, half the audience wants to hear about how does the guy fit? Who am I getting? The other half of the audience wants to get onto the next pick. Give me the 4-minute run up to the Lions. And you got to tell you the commercial in there somewhere. So it's always a hard show to satisfy the viewers, but both networks do a really nice job doing it. It's not easy for sure.
What's your favorite draft moment that you hosted?
Tom Brady. I was on the air for Tom Brady, and every year now for the last 10 years or so, the anniversary of the Brady pick, which is also Belichick's birthday in late April, that clip surfaces on social media, and I get a number of, hey, you had hair back then. Yes, I did. Hey, Kiper's hair hasn't changed. No, it hasn't. The headline of the thing, I had a pretty good insight into the Michigan situation. I wasn't living there at that point, but was covering college football, and I was able to kind of put in context that Brady wasn't starting. Drew Henson was there. And Kiper's analysis of Brady is spot on. If you ever get a chance, go back and listen to it. Kiper nailed Brady on pick 199 in the draft 21 years ago. It was not that he was going to be the all-time great, but what he could be in the league and the opportunities that he showed when he had his time at Michigan.
He's Mike Tirico, host, play-by-play voice, NBC Sports, NBC Football Night in America, and the Kentucky Derby. What do we need to know? What's this audience need to know about tomorrow?
All right, no super horse, but a bunch of really good ones. As many as 8 legitimately have a chance. I have to ask Randy Moss and Jerry Bailey, who I'm on the set with, and they're awesome. They've done this for many, many years. And I said, guys, I start throwing out names. Would you be surprised if this horse wins or this horse wins? And they said, no, we won't be. So I think if you're a handicapper or better, you've got a lot of options in this race. A couple of the headlines, Essential Quality is the favorite, 2-year-old champ, undefeated in 5 races, trained by Brad Cox, who grew up 2 blocks from here. Nobody from Louisville has ever trained a Derby champ. Big deal locally. Hmm. Bob Baffert's going for his 7th would be the all-time record. His horse is Medina Spirit. Not probably one of the top 3 or 4, maybe in that next group. Those would be the couple of headlines to take away. But Known Agenda is the other one I'll throw at you real quick. He's starting on the rail. Horses normally don't win from the one hole in a 20-horse field, but they've got a new gate that has been able to move the number one spot a little bit off the rail. So the experts think the one has a better chance this year than in other years.
Have you ever ridden a racehorse?
No, not a racehorse. I did one of those kind of mule things at Grand Canyon like 30 years ago. That was good enough for me.
Very
that was
similar.
About my speed. How about you? You have it. You're too tall, right?
Yeah. No, I've been on horses before.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Anything good? I mean, do you have it? I mean, were you in a tuck? Were you,
It wasn't comfortable.
No.
Because I like to go bareback. I'm talking about me, not the there's no saddle. Like, I'm bareback, and that's, that why it was a little bit uncomfortable there.
Oh, my God.
Some chafing there.
I will tell you this. The people in horse racing, the trainers, the jocks, the grooms, they're such good people. They love the horses. And this is one of the few days, these 3 days of the Breeders' Cup, that you really pay attention. It gets on the national scene. But the people who keep this sport going, they did a great job during the pandemic. Horse racing didn't stop. People had to take care of the horses. The horses couldn't go into lockdown for 3 months. You need to feed them and train them and work them and stand them up and all that. And
how many fans tomorrow?
About a third, around 50,000, 45,000, 50,000. Okay. A third of the normal deal with the masks and the whole. Look, it's a 147-acre facility. So if any place can social distance, it's Churchill Downs.
Mike, have fun. We'll be watching. We appreciate it. And thanks for joining us as always.
Anytime, pal. Have a great weekend.
That's the great Mike Tirico. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. We bring in the popular analyst from the mothership, Dan Orlovsky. 2-hour NFL Live on ESPN. That starts at 3 Eastern today from Cleveland. Marcus Spears, Mina Kimes, Ryan Clark, Laura Rutledge, and more. ESPN ABC's draft coverage continues tonight at 7 Eastern, then all day Saturday beginning at noon Eastern. I like the all green yesterday, Dan. Bold statement there. Who helped you pick out your suit there?
Yeah, I appreciate that, but that was my wife. She picks out usually my on-television clothes. It was a money day.
Okay.
It was a money-making day for these guys, so I went with the green.
What do you have today? What's in store for today?
Yeah, a blue, traditional, maybe not a traditional blue, but a little bit of a steel blue with a cream and blue colored tie, some sweet shoes. So to end the week, a little bit more traditional than Wednesday and Thursday when I went kind of maroon and then green.
Okay, but Herb Street has it in his contract that he gets to wear blue before anybody else does. So I would check just with management with that, Dan, okay?
Make sure I don't disrespect somebody above me. I'll do that.
Yes. All right, let's start with Aaron Rodgers here. I'm trying to figure out, what was he hoping to accomplish yesterday?
Well, I don't know if that was Aaron leaking it or not or whatnot. I mean, if you listen to people like Schefter talk, this has been something that's going on for a while now. And it just so happened that it came out yesterday. Again, maybe it was leaked by Aaron. I don't take Aaron as that kind of guy that tries to hijack the draft, so to speak. I think at the end of the day, this has been something that started with X, Dan. Like, hey, Aaron Rodgers is unhappy. Okay. And then he plays the season. He has the season that he has. And then he starts to get more unhappy because I'm playing so well, but we're still like a piece away from actually winning the Super Bowl, so to speak. And so that festers a little bit. And the Packers are like, we need to address this. So then over the last month, it sounds like maybe 6 weeks or so, they've gone out to him and said, how can we fix this? How can we fix this? How can we fix this? And maybe Aaron gave them their chance to try to rectify it or repair that relationship. And it just so happened that that relationship has been deemed unrepairable, at least in this moment, up until yesterday.
Yeah, but I don't understand. You know, it's one thing to kind of grab the franchise's attention. I think Russell Wilson aimed to do that. I don't think Russ wanted to be traded. I think he just wanted to say, hey, can I at least have a conversation? Can I be involved in this? Can I help in any way? This feels different, Dan, with Aaron Rodgers.
Well, I think this is way bigger than football, Dan. I think this is about there is a respect aspect. Listen, every great quarterback's got an ego. We know that, right? And so his ego feels a little bit disrespected. I sent out this tweet last night. In their last 10 first-round picks, 9 guys have been defense, and 1 has been the quarterback selected. And I get it. Like, everyone's like, well, have you seen our defense in Green Bay? Yeah, guys, I was in the division for 7 years. But I do think that there comes a point where, you know, last year they chose the future in the draft, the Packers. They did so with Jordan Love and A.J. Dillon, okay? And all Aaron's doing right now is expediting that process. He's bringing the future to the present. And it is because he was the MVP of the league last year. If he threw for 26 touchdowns or 28 touchdowns, this isn't a conversation. But when you go and do on the field what he did, now he's regained the power, so to speak. And so I think there is a little bit of a relationship and ego disrespect.
Well, if the Niners are offering you the number 3 pick overall, and they're offering you a couple other, let's say a couple other picks, or maybe, I don't know, Fred Warner. I'm like, I don't know, but let me just put it out there. If I'm Green Bay, man, I listen to that. Like, if I think we're moving on, then I go, okay. Like, we're going to take a hit. People are going to go, hey, how could you let him go? Well, we let Favre go. We let Aaron go. Everybody gets, you know, goes to another team. Like, I would do that if I'm Green Bay. What about you?
Dan, you're dead on. And I've said that since last night. Like, because Brian Gutekunst, their general manager, goes, we're not trading Aaron Rodgers. And respectfully, guys, you started thinking about this last year.
Yeah.
So you should not be surprised. You can't. That's where it's a very different situation than Seattle, because the whole question was, if it's true or not, Russell wanted out, was who was going to be the replacement for Russell. But Green Bay already started this process in their minds and planning for the future and planning for Jordan Love to take over. And so they can't sit there and go, well, we're not trading Aaron Rodgers. You guys were already planning for life post Aaron Rodgers last, and you're justified. Like, you can do whatever you want, you're a general manager, but you can't sit there and go, we're not going to trade him, when you already set this in motion. So, yeah, I mean, it was interesting last night because I started to think, well, if you're San Francisco and you don't have any more assets first round pick wise, because you use those to get up, like, do you take Kyle Pitts at 3 and then give him Bosa, Kyle Pitts, and, you know, next year's one? I don't know, or the first round pick. So, I don't think that Green Bay should sit back and go, nope, we're not trading them, because you've already started this thought process.
We're talking to Dan Orlovsky of the Mothership. How does this work for the 49ers with Trey Lance?
I think it's the greatest flyer at quarterback in the history of the first round when they selected Trey Lance. Super talented, super bright. Check all that box talk, right? Quarterback is a repetition position. The only way you get better, and to really know, is repetitions. He's got 118 pass attempts in college. It's the lowest that a first-round quarterback has had in 40 years. Okay, it's one guy in the first round in the last 15 years has had under 400. That's Mark Sanchez, 487. So I think the challenge for San Francisco is this. I think Trey Lance needs to get on the field and play because of what I just mentioned. He needs reps, okay? And that's the only way to really develop is get those reps. Now, the challenge is San Francisco also has to win football games. You know, they've got a losing record three out of the four seasons, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, who I love. But that's it. That is what they are. And so they need to win. And they've got a roster to win. Now, the challenge is developing a quarterback, but also winning football games is very hard to do. Okay. And a lot of times young quarterbacks fail because of that burden, because when it gets to win at all costs, you revert back to old habits and that stunts your development. And Kyle needs to go from great offensive mind to really good quarterback developer.
I like in the first round to playing blackjack. Like you have certain numbers that you hit on or in certain numbers where you go, I'm going to stay. Like, The Raiders always feel like, you know, it's 16 and they want to hit. Like they risk a little bit more. Whereas some of these other teams just sort like the Patriots didn't go up. You know, everybody said, oh, they're going to go up. And I said, no, I'm told they're not going up. They just sat there. They got the guy that they wanted. If Detroit, you know, they were patient with who they wanted. The Chargers with who they wanted. It just felt like the Raiders, you know, We're a little itchy on the trigger finger. I don't know if there was anybody. I don't know if you agree with me. I was told by a scout last night that's the worst first-round pick, you know, with Alex Leatherwood. Because you could get him in the second. It's not him, the person, player. It's you drafted him where you drafted him. Anybody else stand out that way?
Well, I mean, touching on the Raiders, two things. One, they had one of the top eight offensive lines in football last year, and then they dismantled it this offseason. And then also, like, your greatest issue off a football team-wise is your defense, you know? So it's like they really created a mess and then tried to Band-Aid the mess, but left the biggest gash open still. I did not like the Travis Etienne pick to Jacksonville. I think he's a nice player. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think you'd take a first-round tailback as an organization, unless you're like a tailback away from a championship, right? Like a championship contender. That's obviously not Jacksonville. Second of all, they've got way bigger holes. I mean, they actually have in James Robinson what every organization wants.
Yeah.
An undrafted, really good tailback. You know, so it's like, what are we doing? And then they signed Carlos Hyde. And then for Urban Meyer to come out this morning and say, well, our 1-2 punch is going to be James Robinson and Carlos Hyde, and Travis Etienne is our third round back. My mind goes, what? Because third round tailbacks in the NFL nowadays,
a third down,
are pass blockers.
Yeah,
they're protection guys. Old school third round running backs or third down running backs. Think of like a Kevin Falk, those pass catchers. They're used on first down nowadays, and I just don't understand the thought process of taking that pick for Jacksonville at that moment.
What did the Bears get?
Oh, gosh. Again, I think one of the best picks in the draft. You know, the Bears got hope. The Bears got a prayer, so to speak. I think Justin Fields' talent is very spectacular. I think the thing that I sit here and say this morning is, it's on you now, Matt Nagy, to do for Justin Fields what you didn't, couldn't, and wouldn't for Mitchell Trubisky. And I had said that for years, is one of the things that Mitchell Trubisky did have was athleticism. He did have, and listen, Justin's way more talented than Mitchell, but they never allowed Mitchell to be an athlete. They never saw, okay, that's a strength. We got to do a lot of that stuff. And the reality is that is a strength for Justin Fields, is his athleticism. So you better find ways to utilize it. And then they never addressed his flaws or his weaknesses, because his flaws and weaknesses were mechanics. That's the same for Justin. And you better attack that, because then the talent never shines if you don't. And they better not. I think they asked Mitchell Trubisky to be a player that he's not. Pocket passer, statue guy. Don't do that for Justin Fields. Don't do that with him. Yeah. And I think that's if Matt Nagy can sit there and look at himself in the mirror and go, I learned from that, then we're talking about something in Chicago. But it's all on Matt Nagy.
Mac Jones to the Patriots. They didn't have to go up. They got
him. Which blows my mind. How do they not know? Or how did they know? Like, how did they know that someone wasn't going to jump them? Pittsburgh, Washington, the Raiders, somebody wasn't going to jump them. Because I do think that they like Mac Jones. And I do think that he can be a really good player. So how did Bill have, like, such incredible discipline to just sit there and know no one's going to go get him? Blows my mind. I think he's got a chance to be a really good player there.
The Eagles had the 10th pick, and I was wondering if they were going to take Justin Fields. Now, I know you have Jalen Hurts, but yeah. I thought Washington football team might go up and try to get Justin Fields. Like, there were teams that I mentioned the Bears yesterday that I thought that they could go up. I thought Pittsburgh may be interested in Justin Fields. So, like, it's one of those where we can talk, we can have mocks, you know, we can have conversations in the war room, but when you're on the clock and when you got to make a move there, like, I can't imagine what that pressure must be like for some of these teams where they're going, we got to wait and wait. But Belichick and his dog, you know, maybe they were just chilling and it's like, all right, let me know when we're on the clock.
Yeah. And it's just like to have the ability to know that's the player you want and not get, I guess, trigger happy is the phrase, or not get in panic mode. And even if it's like, hey, we got to go from 15 to 12 or we got to go 15 to 13 because we're worried someone is going to jump us. That is what, and I guess that's what happens when you've been in the NFL forever and you've probably got so many connections that he knew, because there's no way that he doesn't know and just sits there, in my opinion. And that's what having information is such a powerful thing.
You were drafted in the 5th round. What kind of draft party did you have when you were selected?
Dan, I had a depressing one, dude. Like, first of all, my draft was old school. So it was 2 days, rounds 1 through 3 Friday, and then rounds 4 through 7 on Saturday. Or no, Saturday, Sunday, excuse me. I thought I was going to get drafted on like the 3rd round. The last pick of the 3rd round, I didn't, obviously. The last pick of the 3rd round was Maurice Clarett, who was coming off of a year of not playing and had some off-the-field stuff. And I got furious. I was like, how's this guy drafted? And I wasn't. So I hung on the next day, shattered my phone like a child, you know, and was angry, and then finally got the call.
Wait, you broke your phone?
Shattered my phone when that pick was made, shattered it against the ground, which is stupid.
Hard to get a hold of you the next day.
So I have to go to the Verizon store the next morning super early. I'm waiting there for the worker to come to open up the store, get a new phone. My agent's trying to call me, and he's like, hey, you'll go off the board soon here. That doesn't happen, obviously, because I went in the 5th round. So I'm angry, I'm bitter. And then finally the call comes. It was Coach Mariucci, who I actually got to see yesterday, Mooch. And it went from like anger to joy, which was awesome. Celebrated that night for sure with some friends. But, you know, it was a unique one.
Who told you they were going to draft you and they didn't?
Seattle.
Ooh.
Seattle in the 3rd round. Seattle in the 3rd round called me and told me, we're drafting you. I think it was the 82nd pick, if I'm correct, and said, we're going to take you. I'm sitting there watching the television, and they took David Green. Remember the lefty out of Georgia who was really good in college? David Green, the lefty quarterback out of Georgia?
I don't remember him.
Yeah, so not only did they tell me they were taking me at 82 and didn't, but they also took a quarterback.
Yeah, Paulie.
David Green never played a snap in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, a little bittersweet. And then I was sitting there like, well, I got to go. So then New Orleans took like Adrian McPherson, and I was like, what the heck? And I think the Panthers took Stephon LaFours, and I'm like, what is it? So like 97 quarterbacks went ahead of
Kyle Orton went ahead of you.
KO, who, and Kyle Orton's the reason I didn't go to Purdue. So when Kyle Orton goes ahead of me, I'm like, wait, I didn't go to Purdue because of Orton. I got drafted later than Orton.
Yeah, but who are those guys? They're not on NFL Live.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's because Orton made a lot more money than me. That's why.
Yeah. Hey, great to talk to you. Have fun today and enjoy the weekend. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, bud. Good to see you.
That's Dan Orlovsky, ESPN NFL analyst.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.